I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Find the books, people, recipes, restaurants, value wines, and easy cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Okay, why do grown-ups and kids fight about food? Is there a way around it? I talk with New Haven psychologist Dr. Nancy Horn about reframing the food fight strategy. Now, maybe you have had a food fight or 2 million. Think about it. It's a weekend. You're about to take a bite of the perfectly fluffy glazed donut, still warm from the fryer, the best-looking donut the world has ever known. And just as you begin to wrap your mouth around it, your partner says, "I can't believe you're going to eat that before lunch with your cholesterol." Well, those are food war fighting words. True, food direction can be offered with the best of intentions. And, you know, to be honest, maybe you are digging your way into a host of problems along with bigger clothes. But how much is the discussion about fear, about control or hostility? What is the smartest way to handle this common problem? When you think about it, kids want cookies. Parents want them to have healthier snacks. You want meat and potatoes, but your partner thinks you should move toward a veggie diet. Or you're convinced food has become poison, really, and must be totally organic. Do you even secretly wonder if the brown paper grocery bag is made with life-threatening chemicals? In this kind of world, or in this frame of mind, is it possible to avoid food fights altogether or food fear? Dr. Nancy Horn is back with us. Lucky us. She has ideas and tips. She also has many children, and she has seen and heard about food fights. Welcome back, Nancy.
Hello, Faith. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you. So you've been listening to everyday conversation about food. And what is it that you've noticed about how we talk about food now?
I have to say, Faith, I am astounded that everybody seems to know everything about food. People used to know, religion used to be like that. People would say, "Oh, I know the right religion. I know everything. I know the right way." But now it's food. Everyone seems to be an expert.
And it's
astounding to me. Bossy, but they know everything. I mean, they know exactly what's good or not good and what we should eat and shouldn't eat. And yet their opinions are different all the time. They have different opinions, but everyone believes that they're an expert.
So you said people are giving speeches. If you just say a few words about food, you just throw that out there.
Yeah.
And then the speech begins. Right.
It used to be true for dieting. This is a test. You ask somebody, mention that you want to lose weight, and then see if the people closest to you are going to give you a speech about how to do it and how you should be doing it. And then try it another time and see if you get exactly the same speech. I noticed that.
With food? You mean just
Well, no, first do it with the losing weight, because then they'll tell you exactly and emphatically how it should be done.
Well, here's the start of a food war, I think. You're sitting, you're eating something that you enjoy tremendously, and a person opposite you says, "Ugh, I hate that." And I look across and I think, were you raised by wolves? You know, when did someone tell you that you can disparage something that the person opposite you is obviously enjoying?
Well, right now, everybody's scared. They're scared about food, and their food is a source of danger. And so people think they know exactly what people should be eating, and they also think it's dangerous. So their loved ones are very upset if they're not eating in line. And then there's a lot, I have to say, quite honestly, there's some loved ones who act like they're being compliant. Verbally, they don't ever confront the person they're with, but then they secretly eat on the side, sneak on the side.
That's so true. All right, coming back to this idea of that you're living with a doctor, a medical doctor, or you're living with a nutritionist, because this is the way that your partner is behaving about food. You might get judgment stares or critical comments if you eat something that person thinks is bad for that person,
yeah,
even, or for you. And, you know, some of this, I'm granted, well-intentioned. You know, you can watch someone you love eat something so horrible and think, "Oh, you're going to die. I'm afraid you're going to die, so I have to step in here." But the other thing is, though, it's like there's this whole control, food control.
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of couples work, and so people are trying to work out these kinds of issues. Now, some people do work out that they are going to, they have a pact with each other. They're going to tell somebody, don't eat that, or help them stay on their diet. And they both truly agree that they're going to do that with each other, and they're going to keep their weight down. And that's a different case, because they've agreed on that together and truly agreed on it. But for everybody else, it's just, it looks very controlling, and most people don't like to be controlled. And in fact, some people get rebellious when they are controlled. Have you ever seen people who decide they're going to go on a diet and then they go grocery shopping and they buy one third more food than they would ever have if they had not just said to themselves, I've got to lose weight?
So even the couples agreeing, I've done this. I've said to my partner, now look, if I try to buy those cookies or I start to eat those cookies, you know, ask me, is that what you really want? And then in good faith, my partner will say, is that really what you want to do? And I feel furious.
Yes, well, perhaps you didn't really want them to do it, Faith. Perhaps you made a mistake.
That's aggressive.
Yes, you should let them not do that.
So what does a loved one do watching, the other person eat something that you think is dangerous or poisonous
or harm them? Yeah, I think you really have to have a discussion about
make
it.
Make them fat.
You mean. And find out. And either have an argument about it, get it worked out somehow. One thing you can do is you can present data, new data to somebody. So you can try and show someone, hey, this is the information that I'm coming from. This is my experience with it. I think people generally respect the feelings of the person they're with more than they respect their commands. So if somebody said, listen, I have anxiety about your health, and how can we work together on this in some way? And maybe somebody can help somebody feel less anxious about the health. They can go to the doctor more, or they can, in fact, try and change their diet. But that's different than sort of just being told, hey, quit doing this.
You're negotiating. Yeah.
Well, and communicating feelings and where you're coming from, and being willing to hear that the person you're with does not feel they're going to die if they eat that donut, and they do not want to be told to not eat the donut.
So your partner could be super healthy, very nutrition conscious, and you not so much. And so it can cause anxiety in the other person that you're yes. eating a donut or, you know, a frozen pizza or meat, red meat, or whatever it might be.
Yes, and you could have different ideas about nutrition. As you know, there's studies that come out, and correlation is not the same as causality, and there can be a lot of discrepancy in whether or not something's okay to eat or not. Years ago, I mean, most men my age, they get anxious if they eat an egg, because at the time it was like the most dangerous thing in the world to eat an egg. Well, now there's some pluses in eating an egg. So these things can change, so there can be debate about some of it.
Dr. Nancy Horn is with us, and we're talking about food fighting. She is like a psychologist in New Haven, sees couples and individuals. And you can find her and the people and books we feature at WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. We'd love to have you join the conversation with us. I think we're also asking this question. Have you been bossed around by food fear? Nancy said this to me just before the show started. She said, oh, I know a lot of people. I know this experience. There is so much fear around food. And there are also so many arguments about food among people. So 203-776-WNPR. We'd love to hear from you. Food wars on the show today. 203-776-9677. How about the fights between parents and kids about food? How do you see it as a psychologist? What's your philosophy about this?
Well, I feel bad for parents right now, because I think on the one hand, for some reason, they believe they cannot upset their children at all, even though parents are supposed to be the socializing, civilizing agent for their children. And that means that they have to say no to their kids. They have to say, you can't impulsively do what you want, because it's either dangerous or you will not fit into society in a way that'll be acceptable for you in the long run. So they have to be sort of the no for their kids. And if they're not, then their kids are going to get a no from society in a way that is probably less loving than the parents can do. So the parents are commissioned on that level. But for some reason right now, there's a whole thing about how you can't upset your children.
They have you think to be, it's some kind of self-esteem thing?
I don't know.
It
may have to do with that.
They think.
Generally, I've thought that parents were the ones that needed it. Like, parents need to not be bossed around right now. They're feeling like they don't want to be bossed around. So they're kind of like trying to not do it with their kids. On the other hand, with food fear, they have to be worried about what the kids do put in and what they don't put in their mouth. So that's a tough position to be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in a second I want to talk to you about how you negotiate this with kids, because on their own, they get into some wacky little zones, little kids do. We're going to get to that in a second. Dr. Nancy Horn is here. Sandra, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I want to know how you handle it, or how you suggest working with someone when you have, you know, diabetes in the family, whether it's a child, you know, with type 1, or I had my husband to deal with type 2, and they literally are killing themselves.
Yeah, I was going to raise this issue with you and say that's a tough situation, because somebody's health is potentially damaged. I know a situation like this where I've watched a family member in a similar circumstance, just, you know, and my hair would be standing up on the back of my neck as each mouthful of this, you know, so-called damaging food was going into his mouth. So I know what that feels like. But what do you do?
Well, we were one of those couples that had romance back in the 60s and married, and I came up here from Texas and became his nurse for a little while and got him. He had open heart surgery and lost 70 pounds and did just great for that honeymoon period for 2 years. And then he just discovered food bars. And it was like he really didn't. He said, you know, he had decided he wasn't going to have surgery or live any longer before I came. And it really, I think he said, you know, if life, to himself, you know, if life is going to be this discouraging, I don't want to do it. He'd always been whole hog about anything he did. He was, you know, whatever he did with all of his enthusiasm and everything. And he was that way about food. And he really kind of chose to, but he had, his previous two wives had died from weight because they had breast cancer that was probably caused from being like 100 pounds overweight. And he was doing that to me, and it kind of got to be really personal. And I thought, well, and unfortunately, or fortunately, maybe for him, he took a fall down the stairs, and he went to the hospital and got all those lovely infections that they have, and the Lord took him home, and so that solved the problem. But some people, I think they live to eat, and when they retire, they think, you know, this is my life.
Yeah.
In that situation, I usually try and have people have the families meet with the doctor and talk about diet and nutrition and what's going to be healthy, because a lot of people try and deny the dietary concerns, and they're ignorant about them. So if the whole family is on board about it, sometimes that works. And the second thing is to replace a food with some other kind of nourishment, which you could do. Say, okay, well, instead of this, let's do something else that's nourishing. Let's do something that's nourishing.
Well, I was going to say, there's a diet. I was going to say, in a church I've been in, it was like you feed on the word or whatever, but you take something and put it in that place with passion. That instead of eating, you know, you're distracted to do something that you really do love and really do care about.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for calling the show, Sandra. Okay, good luck to you. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're back to talk about food wars. If you feel bossed around by food or somebody else about food, and you want to give your point of view, we'd love to hear from you. And more Dr. Nancy Horn in just a minute or so. We'll be right back. find what we talk about on the show anytime online and at WNPR.org. Click on programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. Food fighting. Psychologist Dr. Nancy Horn is here. She sees kids and couples couples and individuals in New Haven, and you can find her and the people and books we feature at WNPR.org, as I mentioned. All right, we're talking about the kind of food wars that can happen all over the place, really. Nancy's asked the question, is food now running our world? So that's a question. Let's think about little kids for a second, because they can go through these periods, these behaviors that are so strange. It's just out of the blue on a Tuesday morning. A child gets up and decides, I no longer eat fish. I will only eat white food. It has to be cheese and noodles, white bread. I mean, they go through these. I don't know if it has to do with how their taste buds develop or what this is about, but I've seen a lot of kids do this. Or they crave something, you know, past what's good for them. Or they don't want to eat at all at the table. You know, even though you know they have to be hungry, because they haven't had anything for hours and hours and hours. And they're just, I don't know if they're bored with the food. So talk to me about this. You've seen that. You have four kids.
Well, the first thing I recommend is that people talk with their pediatrician about food and diet and what they think kids need and how much flexibility people have about that. And secondly, I think they need to serve at meals what they want their kids to eat. That's what you do. You serve at those meals what you want your kids to eat.
Meaning what?
What's important is what you do as a family, how you're going to eat together, what you all eat, what the value is. And I think that that's.
Oh, instead of I'll make you you're having chicken. And
right.
This
is what we're going to have because this is yummy and we're going to have fun and we're going to. Not put a lot of emphasis on food worry or food eating. We're going to have a pleasurable, fun time at a meal, and here's what the food is that you get to eat. And it works. It can work very well because...
Well, what was the rule in your house?
I did this thing. Sweets were a bad thing when I was raising my kids. So I served fruit for dessert for my kids when they were little, like 1-year-old, 2-year-old. And then I just stopped dessert. I served just a whole meal and skipped the whole sort of sweet thing. I mean, we'd have fruit, but that was it. And so they just never had dessert and didn't really think about it. But then I realized there was a little girl that came to our house. I think she was like maybe 9. And her parents were a little bit kind of chunky, so they eat like real meals. And she asked my daughter for dessert. And I went, and my daughter came over to me and said, you know, she asked for dessert. I said, oh, yeah, that's right. And so I went into the refrigerator and got out the ice cream and some extra cookies with it because I realized that that's the custom. So we just got rid of that dessert custom, although I had sweets in a whole cabinet filled with sweets, junk food, cookies, pretzels.
And how about now? Your kids are grown up now. What do they eat sweets?
No, they really are not that interested in them. They just, but it's not like they're not interested. If something's good, they'll try it. Like, you know, we love Kathy's cookies. I mean, you know.
Well, so in Milford?
Yeah.
Oh, so there, you said that the philosophy was, because if the kid said, I don't like something, what was the rule at the table?
They didn't have to eat something. Well, they did have to eat one bite of everything because I would make stuff and I just didn't want food rejected from the eyeballs only. You know, they're looking at it. I don't want them to say, okay, I see that, and so it's not going to happen.
But if somebody said, I just don't like carrots after trying it once, would that child have to eat the carrots?
I don't know. I think I would probably, I don't really know.
In my imagination.
They couldn't just, could they say, I just don't like carrots? Yeah, they probably would, just wouldn't have to eat them if they took one bite of everything.
How about that thing where a parent will say, you will sit there, I don't care if it's still, you have to go to bed. You will sit there until you finish those carrots. Or...
I think people should ask their pediatricians if that's what their pediatricians recommend for them. Okay.
Katie, Faith Middleton with Dr. Nancy Horn. Welcome to the show. Food Wars.
Hi.
Hi, Katie. Go ahead.
You know, it's funny. This is such a great topic because I'm in recovery from anorexia, so my fear of food has always been, you know, as I grew I learned about it. It was about control, not so much the fear of food. I think it was fear of losing control. But I think now in my late 40s, it's been an advantage because of the anorexia, I'm now at higher risk for osteoporosis or osteopenia. So I need to be more aware of what I'm eating, but I'm less fearful in allowing myself to, you know, if I want something sweet, I'm not going to lose complete control. But, you know, if I want that sweet, I'm going to choose a delicious Italian pastry over a ding-dong. No offense to ding-dongs, but, you know, to say it's okay.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, how'd you do that, Katie? How'd you go from, that food disorder you described to having this, you know, healthier attitude?
Well, because I think it was more about finding other things in my life that I, you know, it was a control thing, and I had to go through quite a lot of treatment and understanding about myself. And there are certain things that, as someone who's in recovery, because I'm a therapist, and so I've worked with young adolescents, with teens who struggle with body image and body dysmorphic disorder, and it is something that you learn to live with and accept, but that you learn to accept and embrace other parts of yourself other than your image in today's world, you know, getting on a whole other subject of young girls and society image and all of that. I think it became, for me, less about fear of food and embracing the parts of myself that I was afraid to embrace as a young girl or didn't know about. Uh-huh. So it was an identity thing. So it became less about fear of losing control of eating something as opposed to accepting that part of myself and saying, you know, hey, it's okay. And now in my late 40s, I can't be afraid of food because, you know.
It's bad for you.
Yeah, and, you know, the whole thing about, and having a child, too, you know, I couldn't sort of impress that fear. I've worked with families who
you're saying you don't want to pass that along.
No.
You know, that anxiety.
He went through a stage where, you know, he didn't want to eat vegetables, and I found myself getting creative, like singing John Lennon and Yoko Ono's Give Peas a Chance, you know, and just getting anything to get him to eat peas.
That's great. Thank you so much. I'm glad you called.
Thank you.
Thanks, Katie.
Bye.
Okay. I was talking to a parent the other day whose children just decided, and these are twins, they just decided they didn't want to have fish. And they've been eating it. They just said, no, we don't eat fish. And she's, you know, puzzled and looking at them. And so she was making a breaded fish, you know, from scratch, you know, a fish stick from scratch, though. And put it on their plates, and they said, "What's this?" And she said, "That's chicken of the sea." So they ate it without a single complaint. Thought it was all very delicious.
There you go.
Psychological.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
So this is a controversy.
They felt they could say what was going to be served or not served in their house.
Yeah. Well, so there's a controversy about this. I remember when Jerry Seinfeld's partner, Jessica Seinfeld, I think is her name, she did Deceptively Delicious. And she had, you know, was probably the most famous person to get this ball rolling about how to sneak fruits and vegetables into desserts and all kinds of foods without telling the kids or telling your partner.
That's great.
And
right?
So they would be eating these things and getting all the vitamins that you're so worried about, but in this sneaky way. Well, then there's actually a sneaky chef that I found online and you see on TV sometimes, same philosophy. And it started a debate in society about whether it was a bad idea to sneak the food because you weren't then raising kids
to love vegetables,
to love fruits
on
and vegetables.
Site.
Yeah, exactly. You weren't, you know, brainwashing them, in other words. So what do you think?
Again, see, there's that problem of how much do kids get to dictate what's served in the house? My belief is that you need to serve what you believe is the right thing to serve, what you believe is healthy, and that's what gets served. And then kids can choose to eat or not eat, or they can be made to eat one bite, or they can, you know, you can you can dictate something about that food to their taste, but it comes down again to how much do kids get to have control over things, and to the point where you're hiding things. On the other hand, if you're going to make vegetables taste better because you've done something interesting with them, I think that's great because you're giving kids nutrition. But again, you should be serving what you think kids should eat.
203-776-9677. 203-776-WNPR. We're talking about food wars. We're wondering if you've ever felt bossed around by fear in the food world, or maybe by somebody else who's worried about you or obsessed about food in a particular way. I think this is so common. I think we've all been on both sides of this issue. Especially as there's been more and more talk in our media about what's wrong with everything. And so Nancy, we were talking about this, is a lot of fear about what we put in our bodies.
Well, poor grandparents. Now, that's a problem. Poor grandparents who think that they could serve their 2-year-old grandchild something from their kitchen if they haven't been up to date with all of the latest food preparation, food buying, and food choice. So a lot of times they're just getting very, very frustrated with the situation or having to completely learn what kinds of things they're allowed to have in their house to feel the grandkids. As the kids get older, then the parents realize that the kids are going to get exposed to lots of different people, lots of different dietary issues, and they become more flexible about it. But
yeah, I was with somebody who said, no, my kids have never had sugar.
There you go.
And they were, you know, fairly old. And I thought, that's a miracle. That's just a miracle. Lynn, Faith Middleton with Dr. Nancy Horn. Go ahead.
Hi, Faith.
Hi, Lynn.
I'm 23 years old and I live with my parents. And the problem I've been having lately with my father is his anxieties are turning into my anxieties to the point where I will be in the kitchen looking for a snack or eating at a different time than him, and he'll stand and watch me pick what I'm going to eat and then go, are you sure you want that? Do you want that? Maybe you should have this. To the point where I just walk away and I will find a better time to eat or I won't eat at all.
Well, maybe he's helping you to become independent and move out, because that would be very difficult to have every single thing you eat sort of monitored and watched unless you wanted it, if you wanted him to do that. But otherwise, it's very difficult.
Yeah, that's tough.
Do you know what his concern is? Is he worried about dietary issues? I mean, is he worried about nutrition? Is he worried about weight?
I think what he's worried about is that because I have such a strange schedule, my eating habits aren't breakfast, lunch, dinner, and he's afraid that I am choosing the wrong food for the wrong time. So I might have a snack when he thinks it's dinner time, and I'm not getting the proper nutrition that I should for a full day of what I should be getting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would talk with him about it. Talk with him about find out what his ideas are about nutrition and what yours are, unless you think he's just being controlling and just sort of torturing you because he's trying to be controlling, which could be an option, but.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling. I was thinking about how I've seen teenagers at supper time come over, walk into the kitchen, doing what they should do, sitting down with the family, but on the way to the table, grabbing a box of cereal, a quart of milk, clearly not going to have the dinner that everybody else is having, but perfectly delighted to have a giant bowl of cereal.
Well, there you go.
So you know, if you're the parent, what do you do? What do you say? How do you negotiate that?
You know, I don't know the answer, because that obviously has a lot of history behind it. I mean, if you're really concerned about your kid having cereal for the meal, then I guess you're going to have a conversation with them about it and try and educate them about different kinds of nutrition that you need, how you need to have a varied diet. I mean, you can educate them, but it's pretty tough. I mean, usually teenagers usually are, I think, quite hungry.
Ravenous.
Yeah. They're quite hungry. So they've started with a bowl of cereal and then plan to eat the meal.
So the teenager comes home after school, maybe a bunch of friends, and they go into the freezer and they start pulling out the trays of frozen hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah.
You know, the bags of junk.
Wings, everything.
And they start throwing it in the toaster oven. And, you know, it's just probably terrible for you. But here it goes. And they're wolfing it down because they're starving.
Yeah, I had football players in my house every day after school because they came to my house after school. And so they would definitely go through the freezer. And my son didn't cook, but luckily one of his friends was a cook, so they would take things out of the freezer and actually cook.
Now, were you worried about that? Were you worried?
Or for them? No, not at all.
No,
they were all very trim. They got lots of exercise. They ate a varied, varied diet. They weren't sitting there eating chips. They'd try and eat protein. They would eat what I had in the freezer, which was really quite good. I had very good things in the freezer.
Mercy, Faith Middleton with Dr. Nancy Horn. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call. So I just kind of wanted to add that I feel as though I've never really understood a parent or, like, I'm an aunt, for instance. I never understood anyone's difficulty with getting their kids to eat, because I feel like if that's something that you implement at a young age, they kind of know. And that just comes from my experience as an aunt. I have a niece who is now 5 and can't get enough of broccoli, celery, carrots. She loves absolutely everything. And I get that she's kind of this weird anomaly, but it's just, it seems like it was kind of this easy growth for her. When she was really young, we would have carrots and ranch, or we got her to eat broccoli because when she didn't know what it was, we were like, oh, these are baby trees. And that's how people get bigger, because if you keep eating trees, you'll grow big and tall like a tree. And it was this thing that was really interactive, and she loved it. And I've never seen a 5-year-old actually like celery, but it's the only thing that I wouldn't say it's the only thing that she likes, but she's really involved and she really likes eating vegetables of every kind. And we have like the apples with
lucky
peanut butter.
Lucky. I mean, so she's not a child who says, my food is touching. Don't let my food touch.
No,
so
not
one,
at all.
One food cannot touch another food on the plate.
You know, she really doesn't like corn, though, which is, I can't find anything fun about corn. I can't do anything about that.
Popcorn.
Well, sometimes
popcorn.
That's true. Sometimes they like things later.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
I used to tell my kids, you know, if you don't like something, you'll like it later.
Oh, you do? That's a good thing.
Yeah. I say, if you don't like it now, you'll like it when you're a little bit older.
Oh. So I want to tell you about a secret way that one spouse has of treating her other spouse, where she says, and it's kind of devious, but I found that it works watching this. It was really kind of clever. So we're talking about food wars. Dr. Nancy Horn is here. We'd love your calls at 203-776-9677, and we'll be right back. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR. That's FaithWNPR. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening, and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack, producer Jonathan McNichol, and my guest, Nancy Horn, psychologist in New Haven who sees couples and individuals. Our conversation is about food fighting. And we'd love to hear from you at 203-776-WNPR. So, Nancy, a woman I know has a husband, and he was raised with a very minimal diet, I think. You know, just a few things. Meat and potatoes, that's it. Maybe
not a
vegetable, but as a grown-up, does not eat vegetables, like them. He feels no problem about that. So there's so many things he doesn't like. And if I have the occasion to cook for him, I always will say, do you mind if I put in XYZ? And he will say, not for me, thank you. We'll have to change the whole recipe. So
Oh, he won't let you put it in a dish?
No. If it's all mixed in, you know, what can he do? Then he has to eat it. And in his mind, he has a long-running list of things. So he likes almost nothing.
And you can't even cook with it as an ingredient in something. Mm-mm. Oh, that's
so this, his spouse said to me, here's the mistake you're making. You're asking him.
Yeah, just put something on his plate.
Because if you just... give him the food. Do not tell him what is in it. He will eat it, and he will not know the difference.
There you go.
And so I started doing that. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
I did it, and it was absolutely true. Now, I mean, it's not like, say he didn't eat onions, and he does, but pretend he didn't. I couldn't sprinkle onions on the top. He'd know. But if I put, olives inside the meatloaf, he doesn't even notice.
Oh, that's great.
So I know it's deceptive, but...
Yeah. Well,
it makes for a nice, calm family table.
It sounds like he's scared of the idea of it also, which is
interesting. He's scared of the idea.
There are some people also that have a taste where they only like crunchy things. They don't care about the taste, or they can't taste the taste because they have, you know, sinus difficulties. And so they care about whether something's crunchy or not crunchy, or whether it's
texture.
Some people are cold or hot. And that's what they want to eat. They only want to eat crunchy things, or they only want to eat tepid things. They don't want anything too hot.
Abby Faith Middleton with Dr. Nancy Horn. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much, Faith. I think it's such an interesting topic. I'm actually a pediatrician in the New York, Connecticut area.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And, you know, it comes up so often. I think it's so interesting because parents are so pressured to perfectly feed their kids. And I think that's one of the hardest parts about this whole ordeal for parents is, you know, stressing they eat three vegetables, but they don't eat peas or they don't eat something. And they don't often give themselves a break to realize they don't have to eat everything. You know, I think giving them permission to have a little bit of variety or eat plenty of the few fruits or vegetables that they will eat. And remember, they're trying to raise a healthy lifetime eater, not just a perfectly, you know, well-rounded five-year-old.
You know, bearing in mind in this conversation that there are some people who don't have enough money to eat as healthfully as they would like to for themselves or for their kids.
Right.
So we know this is true. On the other hand, I have heard a pediatrician now and then say, you know, don't sweat it this.
Yeah.
You don't have to fight about this too much because in the end, grazing, kids end up getting, you know, enough of what they need. Do you think that's true?
I absolutely do. I think that we sort of put on our own biases of three square meals and certain snacks, and kids need to eat a well-rounded lunch or a well-rounded dinner. Sometimes they're full from breakfast, and they've really gotten, if they're growing and getting enough calories, and not too many, you know, just that right balance. And sometimes that's where vitamin even can help, because if they want a bowl of cereal instead of chicken and steak and whatever else the family's eating, you know, sometimes that is fine, you know, just to give ourselves a break a little bit.
For the two of you, here's another question, or at least a thing that I think about. Parents are so busy these days with so many demands on them, you know, and the family. And so I think about how exhausted everybody is at the end of a day, and who wants to spend those moments of quality time you have having a major food fight.
And being anxious about it, having anxiety. Because
right.
Kids love parents who are not anxious.
Right.
And I think you're saying that people should be a little bit less worried about what the kids are eating in terms of the precision of the
right,
food.
Exactly. I think what Dr. Horn was saying, you know, having a freezer full of the right foods or not, you know, just relying on fast foods, but if you think ahead or do a little planning ahead and having, you know, foods that are acceptable in your house, you know, you have certain cereals but not, you know, really ridiculously junky cereals, you know, then that's a good backup plan or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much,
sure.
Abby. I really appreciate your call. Okay, good luck to you.
Yeah, I'm glad she said that because I think that's what people need to hear.
203-776-WNPR. I remember I was telling you about this sneaky chef that I found online, and I said, well, what are these recipes where this food is getting snuck into things? And there was this barbell burger, and it has spinach, frozen blueberries, tomato puree, and oat bran fiber. has all been
oh my gosh,
all been worked into this burger. And I just thought, this is so unbelievable. I mean, it's like it's like every food group imaginable is in this burger.
Have you tasted it? There's fiber in there.
No. I was just looking at it thinking, could this be?
Wouldn't that be
any
awesome?
Good at all?
I don't know. The blueberries kind of stopped me, but it might be great. I used to love lasagna, and then somebody came to my house and they brought vegetable lasagna, and then I thought that was the best thing ever.
Oh yeah, you did?
Yeah, vegetable lasagna was just great, and they even got it from some local store. It was like frozen lasagna. It was delicious.
Oh, that's great, Bill. Faith Middleton with Dr. Nancy Horan.
Hi,
Bill. Go ahead.
I have a lifelong aversion to seafood. It was interesting what you were talking about, the crunchy food. It all has to do with how it feels in my mouth. But I grew up in the olden days in the old Catholic Church with no meat on Friday.
Yes.
When I was very young, and my mother indulged it, when probably 10 or 11, she said, this is what we're having. There's the kitchen. If you want something else, Go do it, just no meat. And this was also the advent of all sort of the wonder foods of the 50s. So I used to make these concoctions of minute rice and cheese whiz and whatever, all on my own. And the nice thing is it's left me with a sort of lifelong love of cooking. And
that's
my favorite thing, I rarely follow a recipe. I'll see something or read a recipe and, I can do that with this or that. And I love just faking it. I mean, okay, what do we got? Let's turn it into dinner.
Pantry supper.
How was the seafood when you were young? Were you on the East Coast or near one of the coasts, or were you in the Midwest
I was? I was in actually the suburbs of Washington, D.C. My family feasts on crabs. Never worked for me.
And did you have white bread with butter and sugar on it as one of your little treats?
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, we did too. Did you take the crust off and roll the Wonder Bread into a ball?
No, I never did that.
Like the size of a golf ball, and then bite into the ball.
No, but that goes to how it would feel in my mouth.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you so much. Good
Thank
to hear
you.
From you. Nancy Horan, you were telling me that there was a study where, I guess, GIs were studying starvation.
Oh, yeah, they were studying starvation and using the GIs as subjects. And they tried to find out all different kinds of things about this, but the effects of it, essentially. But one of the things that they found was that the GIs fantasized about high-calorie foods. So they would picture the steak or they would picture the sweets. And this might have been in a GI that didn't eat sweets that much. So that was one of the findings. So that there are pressures on the system, especially if somebody hasn't eaten. They were suggesting that people would want to eat high-calorie foods. I've had people in my practice who felt their eating was out of control. At nighttime, they'd come home and their eating was out of control. And I'd say, look, what I want you to do is clock how many calories. You eat the same way you're doing, but clock how many calories you have every day. And then come tell me next week. And it would turn out, much to their surprise, that it wasn't out of control at all. They were eating precisely the same number of calories every single day. And they were eating a tiny little salad for lunch, and they were getting them all in the evening.
And
so,
then the body said, I want more calories.
Well, no, we need 1,000 calories between 6
you
and 9.
You are behind.
Right.
Mine says that to me all the time. Mike Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's funny you were just talking about that. I'm wondering whether it matters when you eat dinner, lunch, breakfast. My wife always teases me about eating dinner in the morning and, you know, smelling Indian food when she wakes up and things like that. And I'm just wondering if that really matters in terms of a health perspective when you eat the meals
This is the kind of nitpicking that people are into. And I'm not talking about your wife. I'm talking about the universe of food people now are very, very strict about when you eat, what time you eat, thousands of studies showing, backing up every particular claim, what foods are okay, what's not, what's poison, are the pans poison?
And different opinions about
this. Are the grocery bags poison? You know, I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know, the Japanese eat fish in broth, a big fish fillet in broth with chopped vegetables in it. You know, who does that? We're eating cereal thanks to the brainwashing of the Kellogg Corporation, you know, many years ago. So who's to say?
Okay, I like that answer.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever had cold pizza in the morning? It's just delicious.
You could ask your doctor too.
Honestly, I usually cook it, and it's about three times every week.
I wish I were your next door neighbor, because if you're having Indian food in the morning, that sounds great to me.
Me too.
Really great.
Me too.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
I'm a big protein.
I have eggs for dinner, so, I mean, we work out fine.
I'm a big leftover person.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maggie, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show with Dr. Nancy Horn.
Hi, thank you. How are you?
Great, thanks, Maggie.
I had to call and tune in on this because food in my house is hilarious. My stepson is 5, and he's the pickiest eater ever. We have to trick him constantly. First, he didn't like pepperoni on his pizza, so we told him it was red cheese, and he loved it. But then he said he didn't like red cheese, and he wanted pepperoni again. So I would put the same slice of pizza back in the box and take it out again and say, here you go, here's pepperoni, and he loves it. So we're constantly having to trick him to eat his food, and he doesn't eat. He takes forever to eat his food. So we would set a timer, and then he would get excited, so he would wait towards the end. It's hilarious. And my fiance he has no sense of smell and he has no sense of taste. So he likes the crunchy stuff, like the fried stuff. So he's the one who cooks in my house, and he cooks the same thing all the time. Oh. And then there's me, who gets very bored with what I'm eating.
Oh, wow. Yeah. See, this is it.
With the meal, it's hilarious.
I bet. Well, your son wants so much control over food. I would get him start cooking right away. I really would. I'd say, you care about this. Let's teach you how to cook.
Oh, that's a great
idea. And he has cooked scrambled eggs in the past, and he talks about it all the time. He says, I make the best scrambled eggs. You got to try my scrambled eggs.
So he can use that control, and then he can get you a more varied diet, and your husband can quit cooking.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Come here to have all marital problems solved. Thank you very much.
All the problems. Thank you.
It's our new show. Thank you. 203-776-9677. We're talking about food fighting, food fear. Our guest, Dr. Nancy Horn, is asking whether you feel bossed around by food fear. You can't look at just about any media platform without seeing some scary story about what's in vitamins, how dyes in food are going to kill you, how the plastic in the food that you're microwaving is dangerous, that the water, which it is, terrible. That meat is actually bad. There should be no protein in your diet.
See, Faith, it took this age of people talking about all this for me to realize a fear that I have. I'm generally not that phobic. I got a little hint of fear of heights when I looked over the top of the Guggenheim. But except for that, I don't really have any fears. And then I realized from this that one fear that I have is I cannot stand people telling me to be afraid.
So
I don't like it. People say, you need to be scared. You should be scared of this. You should be scared of that. Scared of this. They can give me data.
Because you can't avoid that. So if people do it or you see it in media of any kind.
I just put up the hex sign.
Okay.
Keep it off me.
Yeah. Lori Faith Middleton with Dr. Nancy Horn. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi, Faith. Love your show.
Thank you.
Hi, Dr. Horn.
Hello.
I have a teenage daughter, and she was always a wonderful eater, much like the previous caller, that the little girl eats vegetables and everything. And she is now she was always very tiny and skinny. And
Lori?
By Slims, yes.
Well, we have 30 seconds.
Okay.
I hate to do that to you.
I just wanted to know, she's just started to gain a little weight, and I want to know how to be a good mother. I've always worked very hard not to instill.
I would ask your pediatrician about it, honestly, because then your pediatrician can say whether there's some concern and can give her dietary stuff.
Thank you, Lori. Thanks to everyone who called. If you didn't get on, we'll catch you next time. Especially thank you, Dr. Nancy Horn. As always, this show is about the richness of life. Find the books, people, including Dr. Horn, recipes, wine, and cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.